Yeah, do you remember when you ducked me when I came to America?
No, don't you dare. I have receipts too, sir. Oh, okay. Okay. Now, we can't even celebrate your goddamn win because you want to bring up false news. Let's put it out on the street. What happened here, kid? What happened?
You said when you come to the US, let's train. It was after work.
Absolutely.
It's an open invite. And you were like, I was like, yeah, mate, I'm free. Let's train. You were like, oh, sorry, man. I reckon traffic will be really bad. I can't make it over or something like that. Some bullshit.
First of all, you were like, let me look at this Uber app. And I was like, bro, if you tell me where you are, I can come pick you up and come get you. But the thing is, you have to make sense. And you were just like, oh, hey, mate. Oh, I can't. I don't know how. I'm just a quaint Briton over here. I don't know how this works. And I just looked at you and I was like, bro, I have the keys to the gym. You'd be welcome at my gym to come train. And then guess what? You got in a plane, you ran away. So don't ever bring that up on my show. Like, you came and you were actually doing this. And now that I know your weakness is a gi, I'm going to bring it like Superman and Kryptonite and just stare it at you. You're like, ah, I can't look at that. So I know what's happening.
You'd fuck me up in a gi, I reckon. No.
What is up, ladies and gentlemen? It is your friendly neighborhood BJJ podcaster, Rafa Sparza, coming to you with another great installment of The Grappling Hour. I hope you're having a great day, but we have an excellent guest joining us today. He's very happy. He can't... let's get that stupid smile off his face. He is so happy right now. And if you've seen the videos of him winning at trials, you can understand this dude has been nothing but uppers. Like, crying, laughing, joking, smiling, probably drinking. We'll see. But we're going to get to the end of all of those questions very shortly. But in the meantime, I'd like to say, before we get to our guest, if you like our show and you want to support us, you can go on over to patreon.com and you can become a member of the Grappling Hour family. What do you get if you're a member of the Grappling Hour family? Well, for $5 a month, you can see our interviews 30 days before anybody else. And for a few extra dollars, you can check out our extra bonus content that's not available anywhere else. But what is that stuff, Raph? Allow me to tell you. You can check out a segment called Roast Raph, where people roast my competition footage. You can check out extra bonus episodes where we do tape studies. So that means we watch matches with the athletes where they competed in and get them to break down the techniques with us on this show so that we can learn what they learn. And you can also check out our extra content that we do that's not available anywhere else, including mini-sodes where we ask our guests, and we're going to do one with our guest here today, but we ask them about a certain topic, whether it's steroids, other athletes they can competed against that they truly have the most respect for, and in some cases, steroids. So I'm just saying, we verse these things out so that we can get many different answers to all of these different things. So you can check that out, patreon.com/grapplinghour. Also, if you like this shirt or this one, this is a nice little different color version of it. We are starting to run low on stock, but we encourage you guys to support the show. You can go pick one up at rapasparza.com/merch, or just go over to grapplinghour.com. We have this, we have this, we have hoodies. So go get them, go support the show. The t-shirts are $25 US. I know some of you are watching from a different country. I don't know what the conversion rate is. I'm not that smart, but you can Google it and figure it out. So go check those things out. Those things and a nice hoodie. The hoodie's so nice, especially for those of us in California where it is very cold. Additionally, right now, you can also check us out on Discord where you continue to get the conversations that we have here on the show. And last thing, you can also comment, like, and subscribe. Now, if you make it all the way to this video and you don't know what you want to comment about, we will give you a prompt at the very end of this episode that will have you putting something in the comment section. All right. Our guest. Well, I've been rooting for this guest from afar. I mean, I do wonder how many steroids he takes. But the good news is he's actually going to be in a competition where it's the steroid Olympics. This past week, he qualified for the ADCC Worlds that is happening this August. And I have to tell you something. What I love about certain foreigners is that they do have a pretty decent sense of humor. So we have roasted each other back and forth for years, And about 4 years ago, he said, hey, man, I'd always be willing to chat. And I'm like, hey, man, I'm totally down for it. Whenever it happens, we're going to make it a special one. And I said, once this dude ended up winning at ADCC Trials, punching his ticket, I said, it's time to bring on, yes, somebody that you've seen through Polaris and number of other competitions, but it is time to get to meet somebody who spells his name wrong, if we're being honest. But it is time to meet one Taylor Pearman. Taylor, how are you doing, sir?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Very, very well. I have to say, I am very pleased to bring you on the show. I've wanted to bring you on the show, but does it feel sweet to bring you on after winning ADCC Trials?
It feels better being on this show than winning Trials, in my opinion.
Yes, of course. That is 100% what we were looking for there. I don't know that that's the case, but I can tell you this. The real emotion that I saw from you was endearing. It was wonderful. There was also a photo that I saw of you almost levitating. Like, that's how great that photographer was, and you were in terms of being like 5 feet off the air in terms of how happy you were. Can you describe the elation that you felt actually getting to punch the ticket and go to ADCC?
Yeah, it's like, it's hard to even describe, to be honest, because it's like you work your whole life for that one day, and when everything comes together, it's just, yeah, it's just so many emotions, man. It's just, it felt like, I felt like a sense of almost not relief, but I've been thinking about this every single day for so long, and it'd been like my main focus, and I've been making so much sacrifice and putting so much hard work, just, and everything happened, like it was a perfect day, wasn't it, really? So it's just like, I don't know, it's hard to describe the feeling, mate, to be fair.
Your coach, I believe, said that you were going to go out and have beers. I would like to know what specific beers you did have if you did go celebrate in that way.
No, so we had these horrible Croatian beers at the venue, but then our flight home was at 6 a.m. And by the time we finished up interviews, I got the medal. I didn't get home till, back to the place till midnight. Then we got food and I was like, mate, I'm just so sore. So I couldn't, we had to leave for the airport at 3 a.m. So I didn't actually go. Owen was pissed off about that. He was texting me all night saying, where are you? And I just had to put my phone on do not disturb.
I mean, it's the right choice because you are inundated pretty much after winning, I'm sure, by a lot of people. I try to give people like a day and a half to like enjoy themselves, and then I try to slide into their DMs. But it is harder because you do want to tell people right away, like, I saw what you saw and I thought it was dope. But I also recognize, oh, this dude's probably not with the world right now. Like, he is probably so tired. And if you're celebrating or you're drunk or whatever, I don't want to ruin that. But if that's the case, was there any form of celebration that you have had since? Do you even get to celebrate if that's the case? Because at that flight schedule, it does sound fairly atrocious.
Yeah, it was bad. So we got home. But what was good about it, though, because we flew at 6 a.m. on the Sunday, I was back in my bed at home by like 9 a.m., like our time. So it was quite nice because then I had the whole Sunday. My girlfriend came over, we chilled, but I didn't sleep that whole night. Like, I could just the adrenaline. So I basically slept all Sunday. I haven't actually celebrated. And I was back in the gym Monday morning training and teaching. So I haven't celebrated yet. But I think me and my friends are going to go out this weekend.
What was your girlfriend's reaction? Because I think it's got to be an interesting one. She obviously supports you, but there has to be an interesting reaction to, like, if you can't sleep, that turns into they can't sleep either. So was she kind of like, hey, like, can you chill? Because I need to go to work. Or I need to wake up in the morning. Like, what was her reaction to all of this?
To me winning, she was sobbing as well. She was so happy for me. But yeah, in terms of sleeping, she can just sleep, mate, like instantly. So she'd have a problem with that.
Hey, that's a good problem to have, especially if you have that spouse where you just be like, oh, that's so sweet, honey. I'm so happy for you. Anyway. Okay. Like, it's a rare skill to have, because my wife will occasionally, if I am even trying to clean up or still like do something when she goes to sleep, she'll be like, I can hear that, I'm so sleepy. And I go, oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, man, sorry. So there is that. Okay. Yeah. I want to ask this. Let's go to the day itself. What does ADCC camp look like to you? You said that you've been thinking about it for years, and that totally makes sense. But the actuality of a competition like this is very grueling. So how do you like to prep for a tournament this big?
Okay, so I don't know if you remember when we used to chat, I was more of a gi guy. I don't know if you remember that. I'd done gi my whole life. And then at the end of 2022, I'd done no gi Euros. And I had a close match with Tarzan. And I wasn't even training no gi at the time. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to pack the gi in and fully focus on no gi. I really feel if I focus on no gi 100%, I can get to ADCC. Because I wasn't even training it. And Tarza beat me by advantage. It was pretty close. Pretty boring match, to be fair. But I was just like, I'm not even training. Like, no gi. You know, I just signed up. I just did it. And then at the start of 2023, I did gi Europeans. But that was the last thing I did. And I only did gi Europeans by accident, because I accidentally signed up for gi Europeans when I was meant to sign up for no gi Euros. So I was already signed up for gi Euros. So I was like, oh, man. All right, I'll do it. And then I'm done. And so then, basically, mate, that's where my camp pretty much started. Like, I was just training no gi. I fully packed in the gi. I was still teaching in the gi to my students and stuff and training with them, but, like, not on a professional level. But now, from the start of 2023, my goal was to get to ADCC. So I had the first trials in 2023 and the second in 2024, and I had, like, a year and a bit to do that. And I was like, I'm going to go full in. So I got a nutritionist, strength and conditioning coach, got everything. And I was like, I'm going to be 100% dedicated, do everything I can. I really believe I could do it if I give max effort. And so it basically was that whole year, pretty much, leading up to the trials.
Let me ask this, because were you just against doing no gi? Was it that gave you confidence in a way? Because not many people are saying, oops, I accidentally did no gi and that changed my life. Like, from the look of it and the sound of it, you're saying, I accidentally signed up for this and it turned out to be one of the most fruitful mistakes because I got confidence in my ability to do this. Like, was there any other holdup or any other thing preventing you from doing this? Because that's so many people's dream.
No, so I always did no gi, but we did way more gi. Like, I don't know when you started training, but I started training in 2011. No gi wasn't big, really. Not like it is now. Like, gi was the thing. Like, when did you start training?
Oh, God. Too long ago, bro. I think Jesus predates me a couple of years in the gi, but I don't know.
Do you remember, though, when the gi was massive? The gi was huge, right? Mm-hmm. It was massive. So it was like, when we started training, my coach is more of a gi, but he did no gi as well. But he was like, we just trained, like, we did Monday night no gi, and all the rest of the days were gi. So, and I always did no gi, but just once a week. And it was like a bit of fun. Like, we would take the gi off, we would have a few sweaty scraps, and that would be it. It wasn't like, and I would compete no gi. Like, I won no gi worlds in 2017. So I always had like a talent, I would say, for no gi, but I didn't put anywhere near as much effort in as the gi. And the gi was like my passion. The gi was what I loved at the time. And I would just take the gi off. I took the gi off for a month before Nogi Worlds, and then I won a purple belt. And I was like, oh, I do have a talent for it. But now I would always go back to the gi, and that was like my main goal. And then, yeah, I thought, I don't know. I guess I have more of a natural talent for Nogi, maybe my style. I don't know. I think Nogi is easier in general. I think the gi, the level of the best guys is so high. Like the Brazilian guys, it's so hard to catch them. But in no gi, it's an even playing field. Like, we've caught up now.
It might also be because you are, hold on, let me see if I have this written down correctly. I'm just looking over results.
Okay.
You are one dimensional. No, that's not the right word. Yeah. You got one submit. I wanted to point this out. You've got six people with a goddamn heel hook. And I just thought to myself, I was like, normally when we do a recap of how you won, I just like to go over and say, like, let me go over like how each match went. We're still going to do that. But when you got one move on six different people, I just thought, like, well, there you go. That might be some of the even playing field that you're talking about, because you can't really do that in gi with those heel hooks. You know, it took us years to get reaping just to be kind of okay for you guys. So now we're at a place where, yeah, you do have this technique, you do have this ability, but were you surprised to get six different people with a heel hook?
Not surprised, because obviously that had been something I've been training a lot. But there used to be a big weakness of mine. Obviously, coming from a gi background, we never did heel hooks, and I only focused on IBJJF rule set. And this is like coming up, heel hooks were not allowed. They're only allowed at like Naga and stuff like that. So I never done it ever. But then I started diving into it a little bit. I remember when I first started diving into heel hooks, I remember I was actually messaging on Instagram to get some advice. You know Josh LaDuke, obviously.
Of course.
I was messaging him. If he ever sees this, he could check his messages. I've been DMing him years ago, asking him about heel hooks. He was actually helping me, to be fair to him, like sending me some nice messages back, helping me out. But I dove into him a little bit, and then I stopped for ages. And then my teammate Owen Jones, he really, really helped me with my heel hooks. He would show me something, I'd work on it. Like get good at it, come back, and he would show me something else. And basically, he taught me all my advanced leg locks. And then, just I guess I wasn't surprised so much because that's something I've been hitting on everyone in the gym. I had confidence in the move.
It looked great, man. I saw the entries, and we do sometimes an experiment when I'm training with somebody where I have them tell me to take away a move. So it's meant so that I can learn things and that I don't get stuck on doing the same things. And sometimes they'll say, like, hey, you can't reap or heel hook. And I go, fascinating. What do I do now? Like, especially if they're only vulnerable to leg attacks. And I go, okay. And I like that as an experiment every once in a while, but it frustrates me very much so. So I know what you're talking about when, in terms of playing it like the IBJJF style, where you go, oh, take these things away, focus on this traditional passing or this. But you could have done so much better than Josh LaDuke. It surprises me that that's the guy that you're reaching out to. So much love to
I
you,
don't know
Josh.
why.
I know
I
you're
thought he
probably
was cool,
watching this
man.
somewhere. He's all
Yeah,
right.
I think he's cool, man.
No, Josh is a friend, and I think he and I will be doing some stuff this year together. So it is
Oh,
very
cool.
likely that he sees this, if anything. And even if he
Nice.
has it on casually, be like, hey, what the fuck's this? I was just cooking dinner and I hear Raph talking shit about me. And I'm like, well, you know what happens. So, all right, let me go back to this then. If it started about a year back to really get a strength and conditioning coach, to really hone in on getting a no-gi approach, did your gi kind of suffer? Like, how much of a backseat did gi take? Like, tell me percentage-wise, before you had that match with Taza, like, what was the percentage of training gi to no-gi? And then afterwards, what did that percentage turn into?
Before no-gi Euros, before I do a no-gi tournament, I would always take the gi off for a few weeks or something before to like try and sharpen up. But I would probably train like eight, like I was training like 80, 90% gi. But then a few weeks before, I'd take the gi off. But then after that, I was 5% gi, 95% no-gi. Like my gi game sucks now. I'll get destroyed by anyone now. I lost all skill. Not even joking.
Great. So you're coming back
It's
to Los Angeles now, and we are finally gonna roll in the geek. Got it. Okay, great.
Mate, you would destroy me, I reckon though.
I
I
don't know,
suck,
man.
man.
I have a feeling you're that type of person who's gonna start going in, throwing heel hooks in a gi. So I don't know that I can
Nah.
trust you just yet. But I have to say this. When I was watching, I watched a hybrid. So I watched a couple of the matches live, and then I saw highlights. But one thing that stuck out to me was, you know, when people say, oh man, today was going to be my day, I saw that focus in you. So when does that switch turn on? Because I'm fascinated by a competition mindset. When did you know that was going to be your day? Like, when did it kind of click in? Was it just automatic from you saying, I'm walking in, it's my day? Or after the third match, did you go, oh no, nobody's stopping me today? Like, where does that happen for you?
It's even before that, mate, honestly, like it I don't know how if I was big on it before, like the visualization stuff, but genuinely every day, months into the lead up, when I'd be driving to training, when I'd be walking to the gym, when I'd be walking getting the train early in the morning, when I'd be doing all these things, all I would think about is me winning all the time, beating everyone, becoming the champ all the time. That's all I would think about. And I genuinely went in, like a guy from my sponsor Max, he was doing some of the videos and he was looking at me. He said to me on the morning of the trial, he said, mate, you look different today. I said, yeah, I feel different. I feel it's my day. I did tell him that. And he was like, yeah, you look calm. And I was like, I feel it. I felt like, I don't know, I felt like in a different I just said like what's done is done, and I felt no anxiety, but I didn't feel any fear of losing. I just felt like no one was going to beat me. I genuinely felt almost like I had some arrogance about me, without sounding like a dick. I felt like just no one was going to beat me.
Can I ask if you felt that way at other tournaments? Because I find that sometimes people have a different way that they approach competition. But was that something that you had experienced before, and had it resulted in the same way that you thought it would?
I've had that a few times, not all the time. I think I've had that. I've only had that when I've done every single thing I possibly could have done in the lead up. Do you know what I mean? I know I left no stone unturned completely, other than doing steroids. I've never done steroids. But apart from that, I'd done everything I could have done. So I'm just there with like, it's not up to me anymore. Do you know what I mean? My body's going to do what it's going to do. And I can go home at night knowing I've done everything and I can't be upset. You know, and when I feel that confidence, and I felt confidence because I've been putting myself in situations where I was training with really good people all the time, and I kept putting myself in situations where I was training with the best people, and I was doing really well in the gym with these people. So I was like, I had this confidence in my mind going in, whereas maybe before, I kind of kept to my bubble, I kind of stayed in my gym. I didn't. You're kind of going against the unknown. Do you know what I mean? But now I've been training with all these people who fought ADCC, who won ADCC. And I was like, right, I know where I'm at. I know I can win.
Well, bad news about everybody else. They will be on steroids. So their healthy
Oh,
diet
no.
is going to be there. What makes you think of that? Because if you're saying that you're proudly professing, like, I don't do steroids, and like, I can see it, bro. We saw you in your rash guard. You know what I mean? Like, we know.
Fuck off, man. Dickhead, man.
What is that? Is it more of an accomplishment to do it without steroids? Or, you know, you're in a sport now where people are becoming more open about the fact that they're doing it with some kind of supplements like that. So, how important is it for you to compete and see how you do, especially when it may not necessarily be an even playing field in that regard?
Yeah, I guess it's only for me. I can feel a bit better about it. But I mean, to be honest, I don't know. I'm in two minds about it because it is legal, isn't it, in the sport. I guess unless if you're doing it in tournaments where they test, then you're cheating. But if you're doing it in a tournament where they don't test, I guess you're not cheating. Maybe you're cheating yourself. Like you're cheating yourself. Like, could you have done it without it? Who knows? You only know that, I guess. But I don't know. I wouldn't really call them cheaters. I know everyone at ADCC is going to be roided up, but man, imagine if I do it clean. It's gonna be crazy, isn't it?
I mean, definitely will be. You're gonna be the smallest dude sitting there with the least definition. The guy
Oh, wait,
still show.
I might come in roided up. Let's see.
I was about to say. I was like, you know what the weird
Oh.
part about these conversations now is? Is that I like to have an open discussion about them, but I also know that I can't just bring a guest on being like, this dude's never touched steroids. Because I'm like, shit, I don't know, dude. Some of these advancements are getting to the point where you can't tell with some people, or they don't talk about it, but they're like, I don't do steroids, wink. And you go, wait, what?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I would say 99% of the people at ACC do. But you never know. I might join them. If you just see me coming in so jacked, you know I'm sourced
I will tell you this. I will 100% know this. And I want to point this out because this is again why I appreciate having foreigners to our show. Because I was explaining to my wife, I was like, yeah, I told the kid, you. I was like, you know, I'm really proud of you. Congratulations. You know, I thought you could do it ish, whatever. And you just sent me like, fuck you. And I was like, you know, it's so weird. If you don't know the person, you don't know if that's a, well, I guess this interview's off, but I was just like, no, that's just the foreigners being funny. It's just like when they
Yeah, of
throw
course,
their
man.
words. I was like, oh, he's cool with us. All right, just making sure.
We've always fucked with each other, man.
Absolutely.
Always.
But it's also different because we don't know each other personally. So it's not like we've met in person to have this rapport. It's just I have seen this go sideways with certain people where they go, wait, what'd you say to me? And I go, bro, like, stop taking yourself
Really?
seriously. Oh, yeah. There have been people who have guested on the show And I have been, I've trained with, we've been friends, and I've made like a meme, and they were like, how dare you say that about me? And I'm like, this is not about you. This meme has nothing to do with you. And they were just like, don't ever talk to me again. And I go, what? Like, so I have seen the spectrum, and I just think to myself, I'm like, I don't think we've been on record as saying shit about a lot of people, let alone a person like him. So it happens, bro. But
we always fuck with each other all the time over here, man. You gotta have thick skin. And my gym is like a battlefield, mate. You can't be sensitive in here. So everyone's gets attacked all the time.
So it is your gym though, right?
It's my gym, yeah.
Okay. What happens if somebody roasts you though? Because it's one thing that you can beat them up, but they might still be funnier than you, and that may happen. So are you getting anybody who slanged something so offensive or something so good that was so biting as a joke that you were like, shit, can I kick them out of the gym? Or like, damn, that was so good. Nah, I have to beat the shit out of them.
Of course, man. We're always going on at each other a lot. It's just like a contest. Then it's a hostile environment, mate. And I've developed, yeah, this arm around me. I just can't be offended. And I've got like a few techniques as well. If someone's giving me too much heat, I do what's called the deflection. I'll find the weakest person in the room and attack them. And then everyone just joins in and they can't defend themselves. So
again, one of the biggest benefits of speaking to people who don't have thin skin, because I just tell people all the time, I'm like, yeah, we do jokes, but you have to know I don't joke about people who I don't like. So if I'm insulting you, it means you're probably on the inner circle. Or we've had people who we've done memes about their favorite athletes and they're very protective. Like they get like Beyonce fan protective where they're like, what'd you say about them? And it's like, we know them. We're good.
These American people. These Americans.
To be fair, it's a little mix of everybody. Like, we've been in this game for a long ass time, and our percentage, our batting average is pretty good, where we really haven't deeply insulted people. But it is always hilarious. Like, if you make a joke about Craig Jones and they're like, don't you make fun of him? I was like, he's the one that's making fun of everybody. Like, if anybody gets what we're doing, it's him. And also, former guest of the show. Like, he's not somebody that we just make up and say, like, fuck this guy. It's like, no, he's fine. So
yeah, Australians have really similar humor to UK as well. Very similar.
So I get very amused watching people get very offended, because they'll send stuff to me and I'll just be like, oh, I don't think you guys can offend me. Like, it is very hard to get like under my skin. And even the guys at my gym, you know, when they think they have a better joke than me, the best equalizer is I get to decide whether I beat them up physically or verbally. And so one of the guys was saying, he's like, yo, ref, he's like, that's why this week nobody wanted to come to your class. And I was just like, do I wreck this man's career or do I physically hurt him? And then all of a sudden, I think on that day, I just chose violence. And I was just like, hey, man, you want to roll? And he's like, no, sir, I don't. I'm so sorry. And I was like,
what, are you a little mat enforcer, or are you, Raph?
No, I'm the reverse mat enforcer. So the reverse mat enforcer is the one that you don't suspect.
And what looking at you, I would never think you'd be able to beat someone up.
Well, you know what the weirdest part is this. When people get brought into the gym, let's say they're a new guy, they're pretty strong or whatever, you know, there's always the mat enforcer that goes to clean everything up and bats everything up. My job is to let them try and do whatever they think they're going to do. And then all of a sudden when I decide it, I'm like, all right, now I'm going to engage. And they're always like, wait, what did you do? And I'm like, nah, dude, I'm old. I'm not trying to show you I'm stronger than you. I'm not stronger than you, but I am smarter than you. So I can do these things. So I go, if you want to waste 10 minutes of your time, then I'm your guy. So I am, that's the way we refer to it. It's a reverse mat enforcer.
Oh, okay.
My thing is more, I'm just going to suck your time up because it's going to be hard to submit me. And that is definitely my gift.
Yeah, do you remember when you ducked me when I came to America?
No, don't you dare. I have receipts too, sir. Oh, okay. Okay. Now, we can't even celebrate your goddamn win because you want to bring up false news. Let's put it out on the street. What happened here, kid? What happened?
You said when you come to the US, let's train. It was after work.
Absolutely.
It's an open invite. And you were like, I was like, yeah, mate, I'm free. Let's train. You were like, oh, sorry, man. I reckon traffic will be really bad. I can't make it over or something like that. Some bullshit.
First of all, you were like, let me look at this Uber app. And I was like, bro, if you tell me where you are, I can come pick you up and come get you. But the thing is, you have to make sense. And you were just like, oh, hey, mate. Oh, I can't. I don't know how. I'm just a quaint Briton over here. I don't know how this works. And I just looked at you and I was like, bro, I have the keys to the gym. You'd be welcome at my gym to come train. And then guess what? You got in a plane, you ran away. So don't ever bring that up on my show. Like, you came and you were actually doing this. And now that I know your weakness is a gi, I'm going to bring it like Superman and Kryptonite and just stare it at you. You're like, ah, I can't look at that. So I know what's happening.
You'd fuck me up in a gi, I reckon. No.
I still think you would be just fine. I don't think it goes away, and you've trained at very good places. But I will 100% be like, let's roll gi first. Yeah, let's get that one out of the way. So let's go back. I want to talk about each of these matches because, again, you did win all of them by heel hook. So let's start about the first match of the day, which already starts things off properly. How do you end up getting that heel hook entry? And then follow-up question, did it become a similar entry as you were doing throughout the day to get that heel hook?
Yeah, so I started out, the guy was strong. I seen him before. He's a guy from Lithuania, I think. Big, strong dude. Like, I don't know if you saw in the videos, I'm tiny compared to everyone because it was day before weigh-ins and I was 85 kilos, zero cut. Like, walking around, walked on the scale 85, and these people were massive, mate. I don't even know how big some of them were, but they were huge compared to me. And this first guy was big, he was strong, but I put him in a straight ankle lock first and he managed to spin, but his foot popped three times with the straight ankle and I thought, and he didn't tap and he managed to spin out, it just slipped and I felt his foot crunch three times. I was like, oh, this guy's tough, man, he doesn't want to tap. So he was going, my jiu-jitsu works best when people actually try to compete against me. When people actually try to do jiu-jitsu with me, I win a lot of the time. Same in the gym. If we're training, if you try to fight me, I'm gonna do really well because I play jiu-jitsu. I don't stall. I go for the attack the whole time. I like to have that exchange of techniques. And this guy, he was trying to pass me, putting good side to side pressure on me. As soon as he threw his knee in, I false reaped him. And then off the false reap, Owen Jones showed me this actually. Like, people are so good at defending saddle now. Like, they spin. They can get out of the mat area. Or they're so good at hiding the heel. He was just like, mate, just pass it to the other side and then you have inside ashi. So you have an outside heel hook or like a Z-lock position, but you have your legs triangled on the inside and it's so hard for them to escape. So you have this trilemma of submissions. You have the Z-lock, you have a lateral knee bar, and you have an outside heel hook. And you can play all these against each other and it's just so much harder to get out. And so I hit him with, I put him in the inside ashi off the saddle. And then I put a bit of pressure onto his hip and he did the wrong thing, which is turning away from me. He gave me the outside heel hook and I just started applying it. He was eating it. So I switched to the reverse figure four grip and then I just crunched it. Felt his foot and knee crunch and then he tapped.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
So that obviously starts you off in a good way. What is different about what happens in your second match then? Because if you've already gotten this, I have to tell you this much as a coach, if you would. If I had scouted you out, it would have been like, well, that's a sign. All right, we got to stay away from this dude's heel hooks. And yet, it seemed to work pretty well for you throughout the day.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, in the division, I was kind of overlooked, I think. I was pretty much a dark horse. Like, Flo mentioned me, like, I'm good, I'm in the division, but they didn't mention me to place or anything like that. And I think that worked in my favor. I think people thought I'd do well in the division, but I don't think they thought I was as good as I am, which is perfect for me. So I think they slept on me. But the second match was against Vegard. I don't know if you know Vegard, but he co-owns, I believe, or co-runs the gym with Langerker in Norway, that Waffling Academy. And he's huge, mate. He was by far the biggest guy on the day. He's a black belt world's bronze medalist as well. At heavyweight, I think. I believe heavyweight division. He was huge, and he was just trying to stall me out to overtime, which I thought, if anyone's going to beat me, no one in the division would pass my guard. I was very confident no one in the division had any chance of passing my guard. So I thought, what the tactic has got to be in everyone's mind is to stall me out to overtime and take me down. That's probably what they're going to try to do. And Vegard played a very, very cagey game. But he's a wrestler, right? He's a big, big, powerful wrestler who loves a scrap. And he, I'm not going to wrestle with him, right? So I sat straight to guard. So in his mind, he's like, all right, fuck this guy. I'm just going to stall him out until overtime. Then he's going to be forced to wrestle with me, and I'm going to throw him on his head. And I was just playing guard. I actually had a triangle set up on him, and I could hear his whole team screaming, slam him, Vegard. And I was thinking, man, if this guy slams me, it's going to be like Rampage Jackson style, and he's going to kill me. So he was like driving into me, and they were just shouting, slam him, Vegard. And I was thinking, fuck, man, I got to let go of this shit. I let go. And then I went for a K-guard entry. I actually saw this entry from John Callestine. He actually hit it at the trials also. So you go for a K-guard entry when they're just sitting on the knees stalling. And as he put his, as he shot his leg back and sprawled, he gave me the other leg. And again, I hit a false reap. I hit like a variation. It was with my inside hand. You can watch John Callestine do it. I think his entry looked better than mine. John Callestine did it sick at ADCC trials as well. And yeah, and I just then, as he's spinning from saddle, I passed him to inside Ashi again. But Vegard only had 30 seconds left. And Vegard was doing a better defense. Like, he wasn't rolling away. So I had to come up on top, chase his heel. And then I got him again with an outside heel hook. With 30 seconds left, luckily. Because I think if it went to overtime, he would have beat me. Not better jiu-jitsu, but I think he would have taken me down for sure, yeah.
Shout out, Johnny. Johnny is one of the better kids in this sport. Nice kid, savage.
He's amazing, man. Yeah.
And you are completely right. His approach is really fun to watch. Probably more fun than yours. But, I mean, definitely it is there. Let me point this out, though. So you already have told us two back-to-back times where part of the setup or part of the execution is based off a false reap. Are we wrong in imagining that's going to be what else carries you throughout the day? Does that find its way back with your other four finishes? Or was that something that was unique because in this particular case, it seemed to work earlier in the day?
No, I did it with everyone. But this was the setup I was working and hitting a lot in training. And I took a lot of inspiration from Jacob Couch, actually. I study loads of jiu-jitsu. All I do all day is watch jiu-jitsu and train jiu-jitsu. That's all I do. And I've always been like that. So I studied loads of great leg lockers. And Couch was like a massive inspiration for me, how he was attacking the false reap and like catching the heel hook. So I've been training that loads and hitting it on everyone in the gym. And I was really confident with my setup and with my entries. And then once I got to saddle, I was really confident I was going to finish everyone. So my whole goal was like, right, just get to saddle and I'm going to get it. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, and I just spanned. I did it to everyone, I believe, except one. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, did it to everyone except one.
Beautiful. Let's go into your third match real quick, because when this does happen and you start getting all of those heel hooks and you're starting to assemble them, as I mentioned earlier, you start to think like people are going to be able to look out for it, but you were very, very consistent in this ability to set it up. So tell us a little bit about what happened in your third match.
So the third match, I fought a leg locker, but he's from the UK. He's called Connor Campbell. I trained with him before. He's a nice kid and he's very good. He's a good leg locker. Like, all of his wins pretty much come via heel hook. And in my mind, going into the match, I was thinking the only way this kid will ever catch me, in my eyes, how I was thinking, is by heel hook. So should I play with fire here and play legs with him? Or should I just go on top, pass him? Because I was confident he was going to pull guard against me and try and leg lock me. So I was confident in my passing. This is what people don't understand about me as well. I actually prefer passing, to be honest. Like, my passing is just as good as my guard. It may, like, maybe even, if not better, you know, but I didn't have to show it this trials at all. But in my mind, I was thinking, right, I'm going to pass him. I locked hands with him standing and he didn't pull. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to pull. And then I tapped him. I think I got him in 31 seconds, just pulled him straight to saddle. He spun twice, passed into the outside, the inside Ashi again, outside heel hooked him, reverse figure four as he tried to spin out. And yeah, that was it.
Let's keep this going. Fourth match. What happens in your fourth match?
So in my fourth match, I fought Linus von Schrenk. He's actually a friend of mine. I became friends with him after the first trials I did, the ADCC trials in Warsaw last year. That's the first ADCC tournament I ever done in my life. I fought Linus in the third match or the second match. I can't remember which one. And I got him with a rear naked choke. And after that, we became friends. And I actually trained with him in the lead up for this trials. And he actually beat Chris Wojcik in the match before me, which is, in my mind, I was thinking, right, I'm going to have Vegard, who's tough. I might have Wojcik, and then I'm going to have Wojcinski. But Linus beat Wojcik, and I was like, oh, fair enough. But I trained with Linus a lot. I knew, again, his tactic for me would be to storm me out to the overtime and then take me down. He's a very good wrestler. So I had to, and we've trained together a lot. So we basically, I think both of us knew maybe how it was going to go, but he knew his route to victory and I knew my route to victory. So there was no element of surprise there that I could give him because he trained with me so many times. We'd done maybe 50 rounds since last trials, you know, so he knew exactly what I was going for and I knew what he was going for. But I managed to get to outside Ashi. I put some torque on his knee and he rolled out and I managed to switch to an inside heel hook and then I finished him with an inside heel hook.
That has got to be fairly great. And it's part of the reason why I tell some of our guys, like, be aware of who's in your division, but don't get married to who you're going to be up against, because Wojcik is a beast and I love him. And by the way, it's cheating that he gets to go do your trials. Let's just be very clear about that.
I want to talk about this as well, actually, later on, okay. How people can do multiple trials is bullshit.
You know, I was doing an interview.
He's English, right? He was born in England, right?
He was. So he's got like a technicality here. I haven't quite figured it out. I think somebody told it to me. He hasn't talked with me directly about it. I'm sure he could clear it up and make it very easy for me to understand. But like just on paper, when he was like, oh, I'm going to go do trials over there. I go, can you? Wait, what? How? And then you start realizing you're like, oh, some of these people are dual citizens. Ah, shit. If I was born there too, I'd probably do the same thing. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to roast him about it and be like, yo, bro, what the shit? You've got two chances here. So, Chris, we love you, buddy, but you're a cheater and we know it. It's all good. All right. He'll write a Grappler's Diary post about this interview and we'll probably get
Now, Chris is sick, though. Chris is really good. I trained with him as well.
You did?
Semi-recently retrained, yeah. And he's well good, yeah. So in my mind, I thought I'd be competing against him, but I did think Linus could beat him. Because if you don't know Linus, and I don't know, if you try and wrestle with him, he's a big, strong boy and he's a good wrestler. So I thought it could go either way. I thought if Chris could get into his legs, maybe he could finish him. But Linus is hard to get into the legs. So, and I believe, did you watch their match?
You know, that was one of the ones I saw the highlights on.
Yeah, Chris went for a nice wrestle up, got a good single leg. Linus played the game really well, waited 1, 2, 3, off balance and knee tapped and put him back down as a takedown. Similar to if you saw Giancarlo versus Fabricio Andre in the Polaris. Like, yes. Giancarlo come up for a wrestle up, Fabricio put him back down and got the takedown because it was like 3 seconds standing. It was exactly the same thing. And so, yeah, took him down and like that, and that's how he won. So then I had Linus and, yeah.
Sick. All right, let's get to your fifth match, sir. What happens in your fifth match?
So this was the big one, wasn't it? This was Wojcinski, who's, in my opinion, and probably everyone's opinion, he's the greatest European grappler ever, I would say. If you look at credentials-wise, what he does, what he's done, he's a clean athlete. I think he's the best ever. You've got him and Langerka, right, are the two like top achievers in all of Europe. And I'd say Wojcinski, like, he's an ADCC veteran. I'm black belt Nogi Worlds. I don't know if he's ever won. I may be forgetting that black belt Pan Am champ in Nogi, and then all the titles in the Gi just come off winning Europeans, and he ran through everyone. You see him destroy Felipe Andrew in the final. It's insane how good he is. So that was the big match. And Flo had him as the winner. I'm pretty sure everyone had him as the winner. I knew I'd beat him. And And the thing is about Adam, which I really admire about him, is that he comes to fight. He does not stall. He does not stop. He tries to finish the match and he will play jiu-jitsu. So again, like talking like I was before, he played jiu-jitsu with me. He tried to pass my guard. He genuinely tried to put pressure on me. And that's why I managed to tap him so quick. I think I got him in under 2 minutes with the same thing, false sweep. And I didn't actually manage to get the heel hook. Just as I talked his knee to about to catch the heel, it was so tight, his knee popped. And then he tapped before I could get the heel. I think it was smart of him to do that. And I don't think he doesn't care. I don't think he's just like, he'd rather spare his body. You know, I think no gi, that was fun for him. I think his true passion is the gi. So I don't think he was banking too much on the trials, really.
Yeah, I think that's always the most seasoned competitor that's like, hey, man, this is my business. Like, what kind of injury am I looking at here? If I can make it so that it's not going to be worse in 2 seconds, it's worth it, because what am I going to do?
Yeah, and gi's his passion. That's his thing, you know, so.
All right. So when you do get that kind of a win, does it now become one of those things where you're like, if you had already felt like you were untouchable, you could actually win this, and you knew in your heart that nobody was going to beat you that day, that has to be the reassuring thing of like, all right, now for sure, nobody is beating me. I'm going to go to this finals. I'm going to make it to ADCC.
Well, you say that, but when I beat him, everyone's going mental in the crowd. All my team's going crazy. My phone's blowing up. And I'm thinking, man, the job's not done. I can't celebrate. The job is not done. I have one more match to achieve my dream. It's not done. Beating Adam is not my dream. Winning ADCC is my dream. Do you know what I mean? So in my mind, I was like, no. I had to tell everyone, shut up. The job's not done. Stop it. Finish. Phone, airplane mode, done. I'm not going on it, because my phone just blew up, as you can imagine. And then on the other side, you had Ben Bennett, who's on a, mate, he tapped six people in a row. He looked like, and he's like a villain, man. Did you see, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Mate, in a movie, he's like the villain, isn't he? He was taking out everyone. He's celebrating, screaming, putting people out. And he's like, he's so funny, man. He's a funny guy, but he's nuts. And he's like a baddie, mate, in a movie. He's the villain, bro. He was taking everyone out, coming. He wanted me, mate. Like, he wanted that title. He was vicious, taking people out. And he was riding on this wave, like tapping everyone. So I don't know, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but I can't recall of a trials in history where you had two finalists who had submitted everyone on the way to the finals, both of them. Can you think of one off the top of your head?
No, because I've seen people both be close, and that maybe in the final, somebody had one loss or something like that. Like, even here in the US ones, that's where a bulk of my knowledge comes from. But like at the US, we're lucky if we get one guy who makes their way all throughout seven or so with that. I want to say, wasn't that like Jacob Couch? I thought J-Rod did it once. Like,
I'm pretty sure. Did Paul Adila do it as well or no?
Yeah, fuck him. No. I mean, Paul, listen, Paul's so impressive that I am on record when we did our interview for his last win. I was like, bro, I'm mad at you. And he goes, why, man? Why? And I go, because we had all the screens on, a giant TV, and I'm pretty good at multitasking. So when we're doing our fight companion, I'm like, hey, Matt 6, we got this. Oh, Matt 4 coming up right now is Paul Ardia. Let me go ahead and keep an eye on. And, did Paul go? No, he hasn't gone yet. Oh, he won. Okay, cool. Didn't see it. All right, fuck him. Moving on. I told him, like, bro, I couldn't even keep up with you. Like, there's so much going on that you finish people so quickly that anytime he came on the mats, I kept saying, like, you know what? I better just keep my eye on him. But Paul might be one of those people.
Right. Can you wait 1 second?
Of course.
My phone just said it's got 20% battery. That's not good.
I realize you need to recharge it. All right, let's give you a second. I just want to point this out, that our guest, who you may recall a few seconds ago, tried saying that I was underprepared to go get him to roll, has no charger for his phone right now. So that just goes to show you the type of guy this is, that he is woefully unprepared.
Yeah, I'll make sure. I need to check. It's okay. Be fine. We'll be good. We'll just get done. So the finals.
Yeah. Finals. Let's get to the finals, sir.
Right. So I'd fought Ben Bennett before, but we were, because he's from England too, and he when we were purple belts like 8 years ago maybe, and I put him to sleep with a triangle, but it was in the gi and it was 8 years ago, so you can't, in my mind I'm like, right, you can't take that, as it's in the gi also, and he does really weird stuff. So in my mind I was like, I don't really see how he can beat me, but mate, he was on a run, he was on a crazy tear, his confidence is up here, which is no one more dangerous than an underdog who's confident. You know, he was probably the underdog going into that, even with all the submissions, just because he's less well known. But I was not sleeping on him at all. because he'd taken out some. I had the harder side of the bracket for sure, but his bracket still had good people in it, like people I really respected, and he was taking everyone out, mate. So I was like, I can't sleep on this guy. He's just, I don't know if you watched the match, but he's very intense, and I knew he would come out very, very intense. So I thought I'm just going to be super calm, let him burn himself out, because he's very, very, very hyper and like very intense. I can't really describe. Like at the start, he was like growling at me, pushing me, hitting me. Like he was like barking at me almost. It was mad. And everything he was doing was like with max effort. And I think if you're not prepared for that, he can intimidate you and throw you off completely. Because when he's coming at you like a dog, and he's like growling at you and he's hitting you hard, and you're like a lot. I can imagine a lot of people are like stunned by that, and then he can catch you, you know. So, but yeah, I let him take me down because you can't pull in finals. And then he was just coming at me, hitting me, hitting me. And I was like playing with his head a lot. And I was trying to annoy him a little bit. Like I was posting in his throat just to get an emotional reaction from him, which he was doing. He was coming at me hard. And then I was threatening arm drags, threatening heists. I was heisting up, snapping on his head multiple times, just trying to fatigue him. The match is 12 minutes. And I was thinking in my mind, you cannot keep this energy for that long. You will fatigue. And then I can come into play, you know? I wasn't trying to rush anything. This was the biggest moment of my life. So I was like, I really need to be so focused and dialed in. I don't know if you saw me. I looked like, watching it back, I'm like a robot. You know, there's no emotion from me whatsoever. And after about 4 or 5 minutes, I would say, mate, I think it was about 4 or 5 minutes, I heard them shout points. And then he stood up, stuck his tongue out, and took a big, deep breath. And I was like, right, now I can start putting on some more pressure. And I started getting up a lot higher on my heists. I started getting above him. I caught his chin once. He threw me off, but like I was getting much closer to him. And that was because of the fatigue that was happening. And then I hit him with a nice arm drag. He had to defend by putting his leg up because he was staying on the knees, I assumed, to avoid my false sweep. So I threatened arm drags. So the only way he could stop that was he had to give me the back, or he would have to put his leg up. As soon as he put his leg up, I caught the leg, whipped in my false sweep, passed him to inside Ashi, the same that I'd done to everyone else, and outside heel hooked him. And that was it.
Damn, bro. So, what is your best advice for somebody when they do get somebody who is that erratic, animalistic, obviously playing some kind of mind games? Like, what is the best advice you give to other competitors when you get somebody that intense?
You can't bite to it, mate. You have to be emotionless. You have to try to be a robot when you're competing. You have to just be stoic, emotionless. Like you can't let anything faze you. You got to be just dialed in on the job. Think about your moves. Think about your positions. If you start fighting with emotion, I guess some people fight great with emotion, don't they? But I think if I played into that, that's playing into his game. If I have a dog fight with this man, he could just go kaplata me or something. I don't know. Imagine that. Then my dream's gone. So I would say you just got to analyze it. Can he keep this pace up for long? Probably not. He's literally putting 100% effort into everything. You can't do that. He's a human at the end of the day. And just wait him out. I would say be calm, wait him out, know your time, don't rush anything, and your time will come. Because people can't keep that for long.
That is fair. All right, sir. Well, let's do this. What does it say on your phone in terms of time? Or in terms of
Okay.
percentage, because I
Okay.
can budget this out.
17.
17, great. We need to get the origin story. So that means we need to get how you started jiu-jitsu. So let's
Okay.
get straight to that right now. When was your first class? Like, what is the first memory you have of jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, so my first class was in 2011. Me and my best friend Reese were watching like the Ultimate Fighters on DVDs and stuff. And then I just typed in on Google MMA in Colchester. And I went to the local MMA gym. And my coach, my same coach now, was teaching Nogi. I had no clue what Nogi was. I had no clue what Jiu-Jitsu was. I went for MMA. And back in the day, no one knew Jiu-Jitsu was, especially where I live in Colchester. There's no one knew what it was. So you had to advertise it as MMA to get people in the door. And he was just teaching grappling. And I just got the shit kicked out of me by a kid smaller than me. And I thought, man, this is unreal. I'm just going to fully dive in. And I got beaten up by an old lady as well. I'm pretty sure she was in her 50s. And she just kicked the shit out of me. And I was like, man, I got to do this, mate. I've got to come for that old lady, mate. I've got to try and beat her up.
Most people have the, yeah, somebody who is a buck 30, beat me up. You have the, I'm coming back for this old bag of bones. Like, how dare
yeah,
this
man,
old broad?
I'm not having that.
I hope that
she
somewhere
was on my
out
hit list, mate.
I hope that somewhere out there she is seeing this and being like, I'll still go. And you know what? Put on a gi. Put on a gi, son, and let's do
nah,
this again.
That. I wouldn't do that. That's a lose-lose for me, mate.
So I always like to ask this for people who have exhibited a true love or passion for the sport. At what point did you know you fell in love with grappling? Like, at what point did this become more than just a hobby? Because it's become a lifestyle and a career for you.
Pretty early on, mate, to be fair. I think about 6 months in, I said to my mom, this is what I'm going to do. And she was like, I need you to focus in school. What about if you don't want to do it? What about if you get hurt? And then I just really rebelled. And I just didn't do school. I just didn't study in school. I didn't. She was like, well, at least go to college. So I was like, okay. So on purpose, I just got terrible grades. Like, I just didn't do the exams. So then I couldn't go to college properly. I was like, oh, look, there we go. You know, it's jujitsu or work in Tesco's. I don't know if you even know what Tesco's is, but it's like the supermarket. So I just fully, from a young age, I knew this was going to be my life.
Let me get this straight. You figured the best strategy to get out of doing school was to just bomb every of it and just say, yeah, I'm really bad at this. When in actuality, you might not have been very bad at it.
Yeah, I was just—I gave my mom no other option. It's like, I rather work in the supermarket or I do jiu-jitsu. What would you prefer? And she had no choice. If she gave me an ultimatum, she said, "You have to go to college. You have to study." And I was like, "No, I don't."
Wow, this is
so.
This is
some would say I'm an idiot. Some would say I'm a genius. Depends on where you look at it.
You know what? I'm not sure you're an idiot or a genius. I think you're somewhere in between. I don't think I can go straight out to be like, what a genius move this is. I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure it's still a stupid thing to do. And I'm saying this as somebody who failed classes because I was like, I don't know. My brain just was like, I don't feel like doing this. So I'm somebody who's with you, but I have never referred to what I did as genius. I'm like, no, dude, I just didn't want to be at that class. It sucked.
I wouldn't recommend it.
Don't recommend it, but it did help you find your passion. And I have to ask this, is your mom still with you? And if so, what did she say when you ended up winning this past week?
Ah, yeah, she's been my rock my whole life. Without her, I couldn't have done anything. Once she saw my passion for it, and I guess then my coach convinced her as well, like I was going to be good. I think she just got fully on board with it, and she's fully supported me. Without her, I couldn't have done anything. And she still supports me to this day. I still live at home with my mum. I have no money as of now, but soon I will.
Hold on. No, you know what? This definitely was one plus back in the mom column where she's like, you're still living with me. God damn it. I was right. You should have gone to school. So I totally get it. But it is great to see. We've mentioned those things. I would like to ask this. What was like the first move that kind of made the most sense to you? Like, what was the first set of techniques or concepts that made sense to you when you were on the come up? Like, what do you remember first landing as a submission?
My first submission, probably like arm bars and triangles. That's everyone, right? But I remember I only had one sweep. It was a scissor sweep in the gi, and I could only do it to one side. So if you put that leg up, I couldn't do anything. So like, I could only scissor sweep to my right. So if your left leg was up, I was fucked. I couldn't do anything. That was me completely shut down. Like, you just completely shut down. If you put up your right leg, you were going over, mate, and I was mounting you. But if you switch and had that left leg combat base, I was finished. But like, when I was a blue belt, straight footlocks for me was something I would tap everyone with. I have a footlock highlight on YouTube from when I'm a blue belt. Piss poor highlight, really badly made. But I made that on my phone years ago. Straight footlocks was something. So footlocks I always, I guess, gelled with.
I mean, clearly, and it looks like you have continued to build upon that base and that foundation. So it wasn't without good reason. Well, sir, yeah. I want to do this. Why don't we go ahead and start cutting this part short since somebody didn't
bring
a charger.
Mate. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay. I want to make sure people understand that when you try to put me on blast, Like, look at this guy, the world's most prepared Batman interviewer out there who has a backup for every backup. He's the one that didn't come to train. But me, the dude who didn't know how to Google where two different locations are, was like, hey, mate, I would train, but in 4 years, I'm going to bring this up on your podcast, and then I'm going to try and make you look bad. And I was like, no, son. That's not what happens here.
I'll take that, mate. I deserve it.
Yeah, you do. But I will say this. The invite is still out there. So the next time you come back to LA, you will send me a text. We will arrange a time, and I will even try and find a way to get you some kind of ride. And the best part is, with the proper amount of notification, I have friends in Orange County. I have friends in a lot of different places who would be happy to watch me get beat up by some dude who's going to ADCC. So I'm just saying.
All right, cool. So
let's do this. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you an opportunity to shout out your sponsors and any of your teammates that you want to credit as helping you to get this big win, to get to the big dance. So I'm going to put the camera on you, sir. So go ahead and take care of your sponsors. Go ahead and take care of your teammates and your friends and family that helped you to such an amazing accomplishment.
Okay. Oh, shit. 10% battery. All right. So shout out to my sponsor, Progress. Progress, for all the support. They've been supporting me for a few years now. And yeah, they helped me a lot. My strength and conditioning coach, Charles Allen Price, he made a huge difference for me. Massive, massive difference. I think that was one of the biggest differences for me. My coach, Alan Pozzo, you know, he's raised me from a kid, and I wouldn't be half the man I am today without him. And then in terms of training, my students here, Enzo Jiu-Jitsu Academy, I train a lot with them, mostly with them, to be fair. All my teammates are ZR team, specifically Owen Jones, my friend Tom Barry, Mateusz Szyszynski, Kamil Wilkes, Santiri Lilius, Dima, all the guys in Berlin. You know, I'm probably going to miss, but all the guys at London Grapple, you know, Ross, Nichols, Aiden Woodhouse. There's so many people, mate, who helped me. Like, it's insane. You know, it was too many people for me to even thank, you know, but so many people have been helping me. And I wouldn't have achieved what I had without them.
Well, I want to point this out, man. You know, it's always fun when we see our friends do amazing things. And for me, there's nothing more than a giant smile on my face when I got to see that across the way, you were able to get it done, because I know how hard it is. I know how great it feels to accomplish something like that. And so for me, I was like, yo, dude, way to fucking go out there and way to do it. Way to make sure that you were exactly who you knew you were, and that it's just the part one. Job is not done, and we're looking forward to seeing you in August, man. But congratulations, and keep at it, man. It's been great stuff.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it, mate.
All right, dude. I'm going to close this bitch up, and then I'll say bye to you off air. But I appreciate you. Thank you very, very much. Good, sir.
I'm really sorry, man, about fucking with the charger, man. Sorry. That's me.
That's okay. I'm never classic, gonna let, mate. I'm never going to let you live it down.
Mate, if my mates watch this, my teammates watch this, they're going to be like, that's classic, mate. It's just, it's classic me, man. I can't.
I know it
myself, mate. I have to live with this every day. I have to live with this. I think I have really bad ADHD, man. I have something. I have something, mate. I'm not right.
I have to tell you this. You are in good company, because I feel like everybody in jiu-jitsu has some form of ADHD, where it's getting to the point now when I teach classes, somebody tried to interrupt and was like, hey, and they were giving candy to another person. And I was like, can't do this. And they're like, what are you talking about? I was like, I'm already up against 8 different sides of ADHD. Like, introducing a new thing and being like, here, yeah, have some candy, is like, bro, your brain's not working. I'm in the middle of teaching. What the fuck were you doing? So
I've never seen that shit before, man. Giving out sweets mid-lesson.
It's because we have a kid who's not a teenager, but just a little bit older, but acts like a kid. And then you have a young kid who is a teenager who's taking my class. And then I'm like trying to be like, I have to do this occasionally. Like, hey, back here. Eyes on me. You're looking over there. Here's the technique. Yeah. Before you ask me how to do it again. And then I give it to them. And this dude like walks away and he's like, hey man, I got some candy. And I walked over to him and I was like,
would you do this to anybody else's class? And he's like, no. And I go, then you're not doing it to my fucking class. Get the fuck out of here. And he's like, okay. And he was like, some of my kids were like, yo, Raph really got mad. I was like, because he interrupted fucking class. What the fuck do you mean? So afterwards, I had words with the kid. He's like, I'm sorry. And I was like, you know why I did it, right? He goes, yeah. And I go, honestly, I don't even give a shit that you were doing it. It's more so that it was happening and that you were saying like, oh, he wasn't boxing, so he didn't have gloves on, so I can do it here. And I was like, the ADHD. All right, I'm going to say bye to you off air. I'll be right back, all right?
All right, brother.
My thanks to you, my man. All right, you guys, thank you so much for watching. A couple quick reminders before we get on out of here. First and foremost, if you like this show, like, comment, subscribe. If you want to know what you can comment on in the comment section, I'm going to tell you this right now. Go ahead and tell us. Go ahead and tell us what move would be the one move you would spam if you were trying to win trials. Just like Taylor did at his trials. Tell us what it is that you would hope would be the one that would work for you. So there is that. Number two, you can go ahead and find us on patreon.com/grappling hour. You can see these interviews 30 days before anybody else. And you can go also check out for a few extra dollars more, extra bonus content not available anywhere else, including bonus episodes, tape studies, and a segment we like to call Roast Raph, where people roast my competition footage. Additionally, you can also do a few things. You can go check out our Discord at Grappling Hour. And if you like this, buy some merch from us. This shirt, all of this stuff is on sale at raphasparza.com/merch. And if you want to get that or a hoodie, the combination of the two is $60. But individually, $25 for a shirt, $45 for a hoodie. But the combo is $60. So save some dollars. Anyway, my friends, that's going to do it for us here at the Grappling Hour. It has been a great day for grappling. We'll see you back on the mats.